for a good half hour in a mood of bleakest despair, when Kolya suddenly turned up with the hedgehog. At once the heavens cleared. The prince was as if born again. He interrogated Kolya, hanging on his every word. He cross-questioned him again 10 times over, laughed like a child, and kept squeezing the hands of the laughing boy who was gazing brightly at him. It undoubtedly meant that Aglaya had forgiven him, and the prince could go to her that very evening, which for him was not only the main thing, it was everything. What children we still are, Kolya, and what a good thing it is that we are, he exclaimed at length, rapturously. It's purely and simply that she's in love with you, prince. That's all there is to it, responded Kolya with impressive authority. The prince colored up at that, but this time said nothing, while Kolya merely roared with laughter and clapped his hands. The prince followed suit a moment later, then kept looking at his watch every 5 minutes until evening to see how much time had elapsed and how much remained. But Lizaveta Prokofievna's mood got the upper hand of her. She finally yielded to a burst of hysterics. Notwithstanding all the objections of spouse and daughters, she immediately sent for Aglaya with the object of putting the ultimate question to her and receiving a clear and final answer. To be rid of the thing once and for all, so we can forget about it and never bring it up again. Otherwise, she declared, I shan't live till evening. It was only now that they all realized the muddle they had allowed to develop. Apart from feigned surprise, indignation, laughter, and scoffing at the prince and all her inquisitors, they got nothing out of Aglaya. Lizaveta Prokofievna took to her bed and only emerged to take tea when the prince was expected. She awaited the prince in fear and trembling, and almost had a fit of hysterics when he did arrive. The prince, for his part, also entered timidly, almost groping his way in, smiling strangely and gazing questioningly into everyone's eyes, since Aglaya was again missing from the room, and this at once troubled him. That evening, there were no outsiders present, just members of the family. Prince S. was still in Petersburg in connection with the business of Radomski's uncle. If only he'd been here to say something, Lizaveta Prokofievna lamented. General Yepanchin sat with an extremely anxious countenance. The sisters looked grave and seemed intent on saying nothing. Lizaveta Prokofievna didn't know how to start the conversation. At length, she suddenly came out with a vigorous condemnation of the railways and glanced at the prince with positive defiance. Alas, Aglaya did not appear, and the prince floundered. Barely able to articulate, and covered with embarrassment, he gave it as his opinion that repairing the railway was very useful. Then Adelaida suddenly started laughing, and the prince was crushed again. It was at that very instant that Aglaya came in, calmly impressive, favored the prince with a ceremonious bow, and solemnly sat down in the most prominent place at the round table. She looked questioningly at the prince. Everyone realized that the resolution of all her perplexities was at hand. Did you get my hedgehog? She asked firmly, almost crossly. Yes, answered the prince, flushing. His heart was in his boots. Explain your thoughts on the matter to me at once. It is essential for Maman's peace of mind and that of all our family. Look here, Aglaya. The general was suddenly nervous. This is beyond everything. Lizaveta Prokofievna was alarmed all of a sudden. There's nothing to be beyond here, Maman. Her daughter's reply was prompt and severe. Well then, Prince? What thoughts do you mean, Aglaya Ivanovna? About the hedgehog? Well, I think, Aglaya Ivanovna, that you want to know how I took the hedgehog, or more precisely, how I regarded the sending of the hedgehog, that is. In that case, I think that, putting it briefly, he choked on his words and stopped. You haven't said a great deal, have you? Aglaya waited a few seconds. Very well, I'm willing to drop the hedgehog, but I'm glad to be able to end all these doubts that have built up. I should like to hear from you in person. Are you courting me or not? Oh, good gracious, burst out Lizaveta Prokofievna. The prince gave a start and recoiled. General Yepanchin stood petrified. The sisters frowned. Don't lie, prince, tell the truth. I am being pestered with strange questions because of you. Are there any grounds for these questions? Well, come on. I was not courting you, Aglaya Ivanovna, said the prince, livening up suddenly. But you know very well how much I care for you and believe in you, even now. I asked you a question. Are you asking for my hand or not? Yes, answered the prince, his heart shrinking within him. A considerable general commotion ensued. This is all wrong, dear fellow, said General Yepanchin, greatly agitated. It's almost inconceivable. If this is the case, Aglaya, I'm sorry, prince, I'm sorry, my dear chap. Lizaveta Prokofievna. He turned to his wife for assistance. It needs going into. Don't look at me, I wash my hands of it. Lizaveta Prokofievna waved her arms. Permit me to say something myself, Mama. I do have something to do with this, after all. The crucial moment of my destiny is being decided. Aglaya actually used this expression. And I want to find out for myself, and I'm glad everyone is present to hear it. Please, let me ask you, Prince, if you do cherish such intentions, how precisely do you propose to make me happy? I honestly don't know how to answer you, Aglaya Ivanovna. Is there any answer possible? And is one necessary? You seem to be embarrassed and gasping for breath. Rest a little and recover yourself. Have a drink of water. You'll be getting some tea presently anyway. I love you, Aglaya Ivanovna. I love you very much. I love only you, and please don't be flippant about it. I love you very much. But still, this is a most important matter, you know. We're not children, and we must take the practical view. Be so good as to explain how much you are worth. Come, come, Aglaya, really, this is wrong, wrong, muttered General Yepanchin, dismayed. Disgraceful, Lizaveta Prokofievna said in a loud whisper. She's off her head, hissed Alexandra just as loudly. Worth, you mean money? Exactly. I now have 135,000 rubles, mumbled the prince, reddening. Is that all? Aglaya was loudly and frankly surprised and quite unblushing. Still, it's not too bad, especially if we economize. Do you intend to enter the service? I was thinking of qualifying as a private tutor. Most suitable. Of course, that will increase our means. Do you propose to be a gentleman of the bedchamber? Gentleman of the bedchamber? I hadn't thought of that at all, but at this point, the two sisters could not contain themselves and burst out laughing. Adelaida had seen for a long time the twitching of Aglaya's features, betokening the swift and irrepressible laughter which, for the time being, she was doing her best to control. Aglaya threw a threatening glance at her laughing sisters, but the next second she too lost command of herself and burst into a frenzied paroxysm of laughter, verging on hysteria, culminating in her jumping up and fleeing from the room. I knew it was just a joke from the very start, from the hedgehog. No, now this I will not have. I won't have it. Lizaveta's anger erupted as she hurried out after Aglaya. The two sisters at once ran after her. The prince and the head of the family were left alone in the room. Could you ever have imagined such a thing, Lev Nikolaevich? The general cried harshly, evidently not realizing himself what he wanted to say. No, I mean, seriously, seriously. I see that Aglaya Ivanovna was making fun of me, the prince said miserably. Just wait a moment, dear fellow. I'll go and see, and you wait a moment. Because, can you at least explain, Lev Nikolaevich, you at least, how did all this come to be, and what does it all mean, taking it as a whole, as it were? You must see, dear fellow, I'm her father. I am her father, after all said and done, and I don't understand a thing. So can you at least explain? I love Aglaya Ivanovna. She knows that, and has done for a long time. The general shrugged. Strange, strange. You love her very much? Very much. Strange. All this seems very strange to me. I mean, it's such a surprise and a shock that... You see, dear man, I'm not talking about the money, though I had expected you to have a bit more, but my daughter's happiness. In short, are you capable, so to speak, of providing for her happiness? And what is all this, a joke or serious, on her part, I mean? That is, on her part, not yours. Alexandra Ivanovna's voice came from behind the door, summoning Papa. Just wait here a moment, dear fellow, wait a moment. Wait here and think things over. I'll be back presently. He found his wife and daughter in one another's arms, dissolved in tears. They were tears of happiness, tender emotion, and reconciliation. Aglaya was kissing her mother's hands, cheeks, lips. They were hugging one another warmly. There, just look at her, Ivan Fyodorovich. That's what she's really like, said Lizaveta Prokofievna. Aglaya turned her happy, tear-stained little face away from her mother's bosom, glanced at her papa, laughed uproariously as she darted towards him, squeezed him tightly, and kissed him several times. Then she rushed back to her mama again and fairly buried her head in her bosom so that no one could see, and at once began crying again. Lizaveta Prokofievna covered her with the end of her shawl. "Now look what you're doing to us, you cruel little thing. After all that, that's what you are," she said, but joyously this time, as if she found breathing easier all of a sudden. "Cruel, yes, cruel," Aglaya quickly seized on this. "Good for nothing, spoilt. Tell Papa that. Oh, of course, he's here. Papa, are you there? Can you hear?" She was laughing through her tears. "My darling, my idol!" The general kissed her hand, positively beaming with happiness. Aglaya did not withdraw her hand. "So then, you love this young man?" "No, no, no, I can't stand that young man of yours. I can't stand him." Aglaya suddenly burst out and raised her head. "And if you dare once more, Papa, I mean it. Do you hear? I mean it." And she really did mean it. She had gone all red and her eyes glittered. Her papa was startled into stopping short, but Lizaveta Prokofievna signaled to him behind Aglaya's back, and he realized it meant, don't ask questions. "If that's the case, my angel, then of course it's up to you. He's waiting there by himself. Shouldn't I drop him a tactful hint to go away?" The general, in his turn, winked at Lizaveta Prokofievna. "No, no, that's not necessary. Especially if tact is involved. You two go out to him. Then I'll come presently. I want to apologize to the young man because I've hurt his feelings."
"Very much so," Ivan Fyodorovich confirmed gravely.
"Well then, you'd better stay here and I'll go in first by myself. You straight after me, the very same second. That'll be best." She had already reached the door when she turned back. "I'll burst out laughing. I'll just die," she confided dolefully. But the same instant she turned and ran into the prince.
"Well, what does it mean? What do you make of it?" said Ivan Fyodorovich swiftly.
"I'm afraid to say it," came the equally swift reply, "but I think it's clear enough."
"I think so too. Clear as day. She loves him."
"Not only loves him, she's in love with him," declared Alexandra. "But to think, a man like that."
"God bless her if that's how it must be," said Lizaveta Prokofievna, crossing herself devoutly.
"It must be fated," the general assented. "There's no running away from that."
And they all passed into the drawing room, where another surprise awaited them. Aglaya, far from bursting out laughing, as she had feared when approaching the prince, was so apprehensive of him that she spoke almost diffidently. "Forgive a stupid,
wicked, spoiled girl. She took his hand. And rest assured that all of us hold you in high esteem. And if I ventured to ridicule your beautiful, sweet-natured simplicity, then forgive me as you would a naughty child. Forgive me for persisting in an absurd charade, which of course cannot give rise to the least consequence. Aglaya laid particular emphasis on these last words. Father, mother, and sisters all managed to reach the drawing-room in time to hear and see everything, and they were all struck by that cannot give rise to the least consequence, and still more by Aglaya's grave demeanor as she spoke of her absurd charade. They all exchanged questioning glances. The prince, however, seemed not to comprehend these words and was supremely elated. "Why do you say such things?" he murmured. "Why are you asking forgiveness?" He wanted to say that he was unworthy of being begged for forgiveness. Who knows? Perhaps he had realized the meaning of an absurd charade which cannot have the least consequence. But, odd fellow that he was, he may even have been glad to hear them. It was beyond doubt, though, that the very fact that he could come and see Aglaya again without hindrance, that he could talk with her, sit with her, go for walks with her, was enough to make him blissfully happy. And who knows, perhaps he would have remained content with that for the rest of his life. It was just this contentment that Lizaveta Prokofievna feared inwardly. She could see through him. She had many secret misgivings, which she couldn't have put into words herself. It would be hard to imagine the prince's gaiety and high spirits that evening. He was in such good humor that people felt cheerful just looking at him, as Aglaya's sisters put it afterwards. He was full of talk, and that hadn't happened since the morning 6 months ago when he had first met the Epanchins. After his return to Petersburg, he had been noticeably and deliberately taciturn, and quite recently he had let slip to Prince S, within everyone's earshot, that he had no right to degrade an idea by uttering it himself. He was virtually the only one who talked the whole evening, telling a great many stories. He responded to questions clearly, gladly, and in detail, but there was nothing in the least resembling small talk in all his conversation. All the ideas were serious, at times verging on the ingenious. The prince even ventured to expound some of his own views, his own private observations, and it would all have been rather ridiculous if it had not been so well expressed, as all his auditors later agreed. Though the general was fond of serious conversational topics, both he and Lizaveta Prokofievna found it too scholarly for their taste, and towards the end of the evening became positively miserable. The prince, however, eventually went so far as to tell some extremely droll stories, at which he was the first to laugh, so that the others laughed, more at his joyous hilarity than at the stories themselves. As for Aglaya, she hardly said a thing all evening. She drank in every word the prince said, though she didn't listen so much as gaze at him. "The way she looks at him, can't take her eyes away. She hangs on his every word, not one slips by," said Lizaveta Prokofievna to her husband. "But tell her she loves him and she'd raise the roof." "It's fate. What can you do?" shrugged the general, and as he had taken a fancy to the phrase, he went on repeating it. We should add that, speaking as a practical man, there was a great deal in the present situation that was not to his liking, most particularly the vagueness of it all. Still, he resolved to say nothing for the present, and merely look into Lizaveta Prokofievna's eyes. The family's mood of elation didn't last long. The very next day, Aglaya quarreled with the prince, and so it went on ceaselessly throughout the following days. She would hold the prince up to ridicule for hours on end, and make him out to be little better than a clown. True, they did sit occasionally for an hour or so in the summer house in the little garden, but it was noticed that at such times the prince was almost always reading the paper or some book to Aglaya. "Do you know," Aglaya said to him once, interrupting his perusal of the newspaper, "I've noticed that you're awfully uneducated. You don't know anything properly if anyone asks you who it was, when it happened, or what treaty it was. You're really pitiful." I told you my general knowledge is poor. What have you got if you haven't got that? How on earth can I respect you after that? Go on reading. Or rather, don't. Stop reading. And again, that evening, she gave a hint of something very puzzling to them all. Prince S. had returned from Petersburg, and Aglaya was making a fuss of him, asking him a good deal about Radomski. The prince hadn't yet arrived. All of a sudden, Prince S. ventured to hint at the imminent alteration in the household, picking up on some remark Lizaveta Prokofievna had let slip about it being necessary, perhaps, to put off Adelaida's wedding again, so that both weddings could take place at the same time. Everyone was taken aback as Aglaya flared up at all these stupid assumptions, and in passing blurted out that she certainly had no intention as yet of taking the place of anyone's mistress. These words stunned them all, especially her parents. Lizaveta Prokofievna insisted, during a privy conference with her husband, that he had got to have it out with the prince about Nastasia Philippovna once and for all. The general swore that that was only an outburst, attributable to Aglaya's shyness, that if Prince S. had not started talking about the wedding, it wouldn't have happened, because Aglaya was well aware, knew it for a fact, that it was all a slander put about by ill-disposed individuals, and that Nastasia Philippovna was going to marry Rogojin. Far from conducting a liaison, the prince had nothing to do with her. In fact, he never had, if the whole truth were told. The prince, meanwhile, didn't seem to let anything embarrass him, and continued to bask in bliss. Oh, of course, even he was sometimes aware of Aglaya's sullen and fretful looks. But his faith lay elsewhere, and the gloom dispersed of itself. Once having placed his trust in something, nothing could cause him hesitation. Perhaps he was too serene. That, at least, was how it appeared to Hippolyte when he chanced to encounter him in the park. "Well, now, wasn't I right when I told you back then that you were in love?" he began, coming up to the prince of his own accord and accosting him. The prince offered his hand and congratulated him on looking so well. The invalid did indeed seem brisk and cheerful, as is often the way with consumptives. He had approached the prince, intending to pass some caustic remark about him looking happy, but was distracted at once and started talking about himself. He began complaining, and kept it up at length, somewhat incoherently. "You wouldn't believe," he concluded, "how touchy and small-minded, how selfish, vain, and banal they all are. If you can believe it, they took me only on condition that I died as quickly as possible. And now they're all furious because I'm not dying and actually feel better. What a laugh! I'll wager you don't believe me." The prince was not disposed to contradict. "I sometimes think of moving in with you again," Hippolyte added casually. "So then, you don't think them capable of taking a man in on condition that he's sure to die, and as soon as possible at that?" "I thought they had other reasons for inviting you." "Oh-ho! You're not half as simple as people make you out. Now's not the time, otherwise I'd tell you a thing or two about friend Ganya and his hopes. They're undermining you, Prince, unmercifully, and it's really pitiful to see you so unconcerned. Ah, well, you can't help it." "What a thing to pity me for," laughed the prince. "What, do you think I'd be happier if I were more worried? Better to be unhappy and know than happy and live in a fool's paradise. It seems you aren't the slightest bit worried that you have a rival in that quarter." "Your remarks about rivalry smack of the cynical, Hippolyte. I'm sorry I don't have the right to answer you. As for Gavrila Ardalionovich, you must admit he can hardly stay unruffled after all that he has lost, if you have the least inkling of his affairs. I think it would be better to look at things from that point of view. He has time to change. He has a long life before him, and life is rich. But still... The prince lost the thread suddenly. "About undermining, I don't really understand what you're talking about. Let's drop the subject, Hippolyte." "Yes, we'll leave it till later. Besides, you have to be chivalrous about it, haven't you?" "Yes, Prince, you have to touch it with your finger so as not to believe it again. Ha ha! And do you despise me very much now? What do you think?" "What for? Because you have suffered more than us and are suffering still? No, because I'm unworthy of my suffering. He who can suffer more must be worthy of suffering more. Aglaya Ivanovna wanted to see you after reading your confession, but she's putting it off. She can't. I understand. Hippolyte broke in, as if to change the subject as quickly as possible. By the way, I hear that you read all that rigmarole to her yourself. It really was written and done in delirium, and I can't understand how anyone could be so, I won't say cruel, that would humiliate me, so childishly vain and vindictive to reproach me for that confession and use it as a weapon against me. Don't worry, I'm not talking about you. I'm sorry that you're repudiating that manuscript, Hippolyte. It has sincerity, and even the absurd parts of it, and there are plenty of those, Hippolyte scowled, are redeemed by suffering, because such admissions also constitute suffering and perhaps great courage. The idea that prompted you to write was certainly a noble one at bottom, however it may have seemed. That becomes steadily clearer to me as time goes by. I'm not judging you. I'm merely saying what I think, and I'm sorry I didn't say so at the time. Hippolyte flushed. The thought crossed his mind that this was a pretense, and the prince was trying to catch him out. Looking at his face, however, he could not but believe in his good faith. His own face cleared. "And for all that, to have to die," he said, almost adding, "a man like me. And you can't imagine how that Gania of yours plagues me." He's thought up, by way of an objection, that perhaps three or four of those who listened to my manuscript at the time will die before me. What do you think of that? He thinks that's a consolation. In the first place, they haven't died yet. But even if they had, that's no sort of consolation, you must admit. He judges everybody by himself. Incidentally, he goes further. Now he just abuses me, saying that in this situation a decent man would die in silence and the whole thing was just self-conceit on my part. What do you think of that? No, but what about his own self-conceit? What exquisite, or rather what bovinely gross egoism they have, and can't observe it in themselves. Have you ever read, Prince, about the death of a certain Stepan Glebov in the 18th century? I happened to read it yesterday. What Stepan Glebov was this? He was impaled in Peter the Great's time. Ah, good heavens, yes, I know. He was 15 hours on the stake in his fur coat in the bitter cold, and died most nobly. Of course, I've read about it. What of it? God can grant that kind of death to some people, but not to us. Perhaps you don't think I'm capable of dying like Glebov. Oh, not at all. The prince was disconcerted. I just meant that you... Not that you wouldn't have been like Glebov, but that you would more likely have been... I can guess. Like Ostermann, not Glebov. Is that what you meant? What Ostermann? The prince was baffled. Ostermann. Ostermann the diplomat. Peter the Great's Ostermann, muttered Hippolyte, suddenly losing his train of thought. A certain puzzlement ensued. Oh, no, I didn't mean that, the prince suddenly brought out after an interval of silence. I don't think you could ever have been an Ostermann. Hippolyte frowned. Actually, the reason I say that, the prince resumed, evidently anxious to make amends, is because men in those days, it's something that has always struck me, believe me, were not at all the people we are today. Not the same race of men as we are nowadays, really, a different breed. Back then, people were driven by a single idea somehow. Now they're more edgy, more mature, more sensitive, able to cope with two or three ideas at a time. The man of today has a wider apprehension, and, believe me, that prevents him from being harmoniously integrated as they were in those days. That was the only thing I had in mind, not... I understand. Now you're doing your best to mollify me after disagreeing with me so naively. You're a perfect child, Prince. However, I can't help noticing that you treat me like a china cup. It's all right, I'm not angry. At all events, we've had a most amusing conversation out of it. You're like an absolute child sometimes, Prince. I'd like you to know, however, that I might well prefer to be someone rather better than Ostermann. It wouldn't be worth rising from the dead to be an Ostermann. However, I can see that I should die as soon as possible, or I could, well, leave me.
Au revoir.
Well, all right. Well, tell me yourself, then, what would be the best way for me to die, in your opinion? So as to be most virtuous, I mean. Well, go on.
Pass by us and forgive us our happiness, said the prince in a low voice.
Just as I thought. I knew it would be something like that. Really, you... Well, well, these men of eloquence. Au revoir. Au revoir.
Thank you. not, man. Let's leave and let's close the door. Let's lock him inside. Then he'll leave.
You better know it.
Come on, let's go. Close the door. Brother's still playing. Yo, man, I don't care. Let's go. Let's get out of here. Let's leave. Let's leave. Yo, Jerry, turn off the light. Click.
Yo, hey, man, who turned off the light? No, don't do that. Look, hey, man, how you expect me to see? No, don't turn. Hey, fellas, come on back, man. Don't leave me here by myself. Oh, man, turn the lights back. I can't. Well, I'll play anyway.
Life is like a dance. 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 Life is like a dance.
We'll be right back.
Thank you. thank you very much.
Hey, can you get that thing on? Is it on now? Get it going. Test 1, 2, 3. Come on, come on, please. I'd like to just move right along with one of them shorties called Green River.
Every weekend, 10 to 11 p.m., bring mania to your life.
Kushila, 谁也睡不着。
找工作，天天找做好工作不是玩的哟，找工作好工作不是玩的哟，找工作好工作不是玩的哟，三十年前找工作，今天找工作，天天找做好工作不是玩的哟，找工作好工作不是玩的哟，找工作好工作不是玩的哟。三，还是回家种田去吧。
三十年，
三十年前没出生，今天终于出生了。
特别可爱的一首歌，来自于今天晚上 Top FM 101.8现场狂热、来 Mania 的嘉宾山人乐队。
欢迎大家，
欢迎大家，
大家好，
大家好，大家周末快乐。我是 DJ 嘎嘎，
我是你们最好的朋友小刘。
哎呀，刚才在听这首歌的时候，闭上眼睛，就我觉得好像闻到一股扑面而来的山野的气息。
是，然后也能够感觉到那种一些无奈，字里行间的沧桑。
姑娘也不是自己的，工作也不是自己的，只有音乐是自己的。
做出好音乐，对于山人乐队来说，做出好音乐就是最重要。
我们从主唱这边开始轮流跟大家打一个招呼吧。
介绍一下，
听众朋友们，大家好，我是山人乐队主唱屈子涵。
我是民乐手小不点。
小不点儿。
我是贝斯手哎呦。
哎呦。
我是鼓手小欧。
小欧。
是打击乐手夏天。
夏天五位都是来自于云南，尤其夏天是
夏天也是来自云南的，
是来自伦敦的昆明人。对，而且刚才我们在听山人乐队的第一首歌《三十年》的时候，大家从收音机里一定听出来，这首歌有非常浓郁的民间的元素。
对对对，
他们每个人手里的乐器也非常非常有意思，
好多我都从来没见过。
对，我们来跟大家伙说一下，屈子涵，你刚才弹的
那个有龙头的那个
很漂亮的
这个琴是等于说是那个云南彝族地区的一个乐器，它叫做弦子，
弦子
哦，就叫弹弦，拨弦子，
弦子，对对对对对，就是他们当地叫弦子，然后这个乐器是特别古老，然后他们本身平时唱歌跳舞的时候都会用这个，然后特别多的人一块来。
而且特别好看，就是那个头像雕了一个凤凰一样。
这